walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. And before we address today's show, let me thank everyone who pledged in support of Talking Animals in the WMF Winter Fund Drive. I was fortunate enough to reach my goal and a real nail-biter, but the station still has a ways to go to reach the overall goal. So if you didn't have a chance to pledge last week, or even if you did, greatly appreciate it if you could visit WMNF.org and donate. Thank you. Meanwhile, my guest today is Dr. Michael Greger, the physician, author, and internationally recognized speaker on nutrition. Greger, who oversees NutritionFacts.org, a nonprofit science-based public service providing free daily videos and articles on the latest in nutrition research, has published a new book, How Not to Die, Discover the Foods Scientifically Proven to Prevent and Reverse Disease. In the book, he runs down 15 diseases and ailments, including heart disease, lung disease, brain diseases, digestive cancers, diabetes, and breast cancer, with heavily sourced chapters citing research studies and other findings documenting how a whole food, plant-based diet can prevent, help cure, and even reverse some of those conditions. And How Not to Die, Dr. Greger, who's Director of Public Health and Animal Agriculture at the Humane Society of the U.S., also addresses his recommended or favorite foods within that diet to accomplish those significant, often heal thyself, objectives. He's on a huge lecture tour heading into a string of talks in Florida, including February 24th at Unity of Palm Harbor. We covered all this and more when I recorded an interview with Dr. Greger on Monday, which I'll play back in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also, later in this program, I'll speak briefly with Jane Alkire, manager of special events at Southeastern Guide Dogs, about the forthcoming string of walkathons that serve as significant fundraisers for the organization. The first is this Saturday in Bradenton. Before we get into my interview with Dr. Greger, let's first hear a pretty relevant song to that conversation with Dr. Greger. This is Brian Wilson with Vegetables. If you want to call it Vegetables, please be my guest. It's Talking Animals.
I'm going to be around my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables. I love you. My favorite vegetable. If you brought a big brown bag of them home, I'd jump up and down and hope you'd toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well my vegetables, car off and sell my vegetables. I love you. Favorite vegetable. I tried to kick the ball, but my chanty flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
Sleep a lot, eat a lot, brush them like crazy. Run a lot, do a lot, never be late.
Better when you send us in your letter.
river and tear us the name of your favorite vegetable.
That's music from Brian Wilson with Vegetables, or Vegetables, a fitting musical prelude to this conversation with Dr. Greger. Indeed, in an interview recorded Monday, this is Dr. Michael Greger on Talking Animals.
Well, let's welcome back to Talking Animals, Dr. Michael Greger. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Greger.
So excited to be back.
Please try to contain your enthusiasm. So I often start to interviews on this show by asking about the guest's experience with animals in childhood and their formative years to see if what we're discussing today runs true to form. Often that's the kid that was the one who tended to the sick or injured animals. Or sometimes, though, they grew up in households where animals weren't allowed, which shaped their experience and motivations in a different way. For a sort of more fundamental element driving you, whether it's the speaking tour you're on at the moment or posting daily on nutritionfacts.org or your new book, How Not to Die, we have to aim our exploration in a somewhat different direction. Grandma. So if you maybe could talk about grandma's medical history and how that influenced you.
Yeah, I mean, that's really how it all started for me. I was just a kid when the doctor sent my grandma home to die in a wheelchair. She's diagnosed with end-stage heart disease. She already had so many kind of bypass operations, basically run out of plumbing at some point. Find a wheelchair, crushing chest pain. Doctor told her nothing more they could do. Her life was over age 65. But then she heard about this guy, Nathan Pritikin, one of these early lifestyle medicine pioneers, and became one of his early success stories. He even featured, actually, in Pritikin's biography. He talks about Francis Greger. It was a living program, put everyone on plant-based diet, and they wheeled her in, and she walked out. And within a few weeks, she was walking 10 miles a day, went on to live another 31 years till age 96, to continue to enjoy her 6 grandkids, including me. And her miraculous recovery not only inspired one of those grandkids to pursue a career in medicine, but granted her enough healthy years to see him graduate from medical school. So it's really all thanks to her.
No, it sounds really like the influence was profound. And Nathan Pritikin is sort of familiar from a more personal angle. Many, many moons ago, my dad had some health struggles, heart disease fundamentally. And so my folks went to Pritikin. And funny what you take for granted, because this is kind of a young kid at the time, I was surprised to learn in your book that he's not a doctor. I mean, I guess would have naturally assumed that he was, so.
Yeah, he came with kind of a fresh engineering perspective where he just said, all right, let's look at the science kind of independent of kind of the medical dogma that had been built up. And he was able to do what no doctor at the time was able to do.
Yeah.
Reverse heart disease, opening up arteries without drugs, without surgery. Something, of course, that has since been proven by Dr. Dean Ornish and others, but back then it was quite the revolutionary idea that we could reverse heart disease, our number one killer.
Yeah. In contrast to Nathan Pritikin, of course, you are a doctor, and moreover, you're a pretty singular doctor in that you seem to almost dodge multiple revenue streams, like all proceeds from your speaking engagements, as well as sales of your books and DVDs, are donated to your nonprofit, nutritionfacts.org, from which you take no salaries. So what's the guiding principle here? I know you believe this information is vitally important, but it also feels like there's something else at play, like a huge sort of public service bent, maybe something else. Can you sort of address what's driving you beyond just, obviously, the information is important, but there seems to be at least one or more other things underneath that?
Well, I think particularly in the field, not only medicine, but particularly the field of nutrition, commercial interests have had such a corrupting influence that it's difficult to really, kind of get at the truth. When there's kind of billions of dollars at stake from the food industry, the drug industry, the supplement industry, it's like you don't know who to believe. And so I did not want to kind of be tarnished or have the credibility of the science questioned, saying, oh, well, of course Dr. Greger says, take vitamin B12. He sells vitamin B12 supplements. Duh.
I see.
And I just didn't want that kind of, that's why I don't talk about brands. I don't talk about, I'm very careful. Don't accept kind of, corporate sponsorships, no ads, nothing like that. Be like, for all the people that want an unbiased source of nutrition information. I wanted to provide something that, you know, didn't have that kind of tarnish of, you know, commercial conflicts of interest.
I got you. No, that makes total sense, especially because, as you know, more than a few times in the newest book, that there's a lot of sort of agendas that go on in the medical profession. And so why certain things get prescribed, for example, as opposed to different lifestyle recommendations, dietary recommendations, unfortunately, can often be traced back to the mighty dollar. So I could see how you would kind of oversteer against that direction.
Right. I mean, the current debate about conflict of interest in medical science is all about disclosure.
Yeah.
There was back and forth in the medical literature about how, wait a second, you published this research about eggs, but you didn't disclose that you got money from the American Egg Board. But to me, that's not the primary problem. The primary problem is that not that whether or not you disclose the conflict, but the fact that there's a conflict in the first place.
Yeah.
So let's say you do disclose it. Well, still, what am I supposed to take from that? What am I supposed to, take from a study which was funded, paid for by the egg industry, that says that eggs are good for you? It's a good study, but it just makes you question. So you're not sure, can even what to do with that information be better if we had just had independent scientists who did not have a financial stake in the outcome look at these important questions?
Yeah, and just like anything else in that realm of conflict of interest and disclosure, I mean, once you've kind of stepped down the quote-unquote wrong path, then everything else after that, people have to then say, well, last time the study was funded by the egg people, we don't know what's behind this one. And even if there's nothing behind it, people can't help but sort of ask themselves that. So I could see how, you set this up from the get-go that way, and you just remain resolute, so there's never any question about what you're saying, what's in the book, what's being posted on nutritionfacts.org or beyond. So, which kind of brings us to the book, the new book, How Not to Die. So it's a pretty sprawling, info-packed extravaganza, and it's also a very powerful format. Part one runs down how, really not to die from more than a dozen diseases, heavily sourced chapters citing research studies and other findings while making the case for how a whole foods plant-based diet can prevent, help cure, and even reverse some of those diseases and ailments. Part two runs down your recommended or favorite foods within that diet to accomplish those significant, often sort of heal thyself objections. So before we delve into How Not to Die, let's address a point you make early in the book that may come as a surprise to some listeners of this show, by which I'm referring to the sentence in which you write, "In this book, I don't advocate for a vegetarian diet or a vegan diet. I advocate for an evidence-based diet."
Well, I mean, can we make decisions based on the best available balance of evidence? Now, look, if you make silly decisions like, what kind of music to listen to, I don't care how you make those decisions. But when we're talking about life and death decisions, when we're talking about the health of your family, then how else can we make, are we going to flip a coin? Are we going to listen to somebody with a conflict of interest? No, what's the best available balance of evidence at any one time? And so that's, I'm kind of a doctor first, and then, animal advocate and, all these other things second.
Yeah.
The best available balance of evidence suggests that the healthiest diet is one that minimizes the intake of meat, eggs, dairy, processed junk, maximize the intake of fruits, vegetables, legumes, and beans, split peas, chickpeas, and lentils, whole grains, nuts, seeds, mushrooms, herbs, and spices, basically real food that grows out of the ground. I certainly myself, try to eat healthy and not be a hypocrite by following the diet I, recommend to all my patients. In general, any movement one can make away from, junk food, processed foods, animal products, towards whole plant foods will benefit your health. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be black or white.
Right. By the way, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Dr. Michael Greger, whose new book is How Not to Die. He's in the midst of a speaking tour that includes a number of lectures in Florida. Information on those talks can be found at drgreger.org. This conversation was recorded Monday. So the fundamental premise of your book is that diet can affect someone's health and the outcome of a disease in either direction. You hear a lot of people saying things like heart disease runs in my family, or my mom had really high cholesterol, I have a genetic predisposition to it. But among the many pieces of information and observations I was struck by in your book was when you note the primary reason diseases tend to run in families may be that diet tend to run in families. For many, I think this notion might be revelatory. So maybe you can sort of address that, how people can indeed stop the invasion of heart disease or high cholesterol in these examples, and providing you're willing to make some dietary changes.
Yeah, the good news is that we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a plant-based diet and other healthy lifestyle behaviors. You can do, you know, I talk about in the book of these identical twin studies. We have identical twins, meaning exact same DNA, exact same genetics, but raised in just different households for whatever reason. So they're eating different diets, and, you know, they have dramatically different, you know, cancer rates. You know, the reason lung cancer may run in the family is because smoking may run in the family. It's the same thing with lousy diet. So we can break away and not suffer from the same kind of diseases that have plagued the rest of our family members. And if we really genuinely do have a genetic predisposition, you know, some people run extremely high cholesterol, something called familial hypercholesterolemia, even in their 20s. If you really do have a really bad family history, then the answer is not just throw your hands up and say, well, and just eat whatever you want. No, you have to eat even healthier than everybody else. I mean, some people have good genetics, can get away with, you know, some bad food here and there. But, I mean, if you have a bad family history, well, wow, you have to eat really healthy. And so beyond being an excuse, it really should be a call to arms to improve your diet and lifestyle even more so.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think there's a lot of people who feel like, hey, I've been dealt this bad hand. My dad had heart disease. My grandfather had heart disease, or whatever the story might be. Not taking the step beyond that, which you're advocating for, is like, okay, if indeed that's true, and that might be more dietary than genetic, but if indeed that's true, there's more things you can do about it. Not just sort of passively sort of say, oh, wow, woe is me, and let's hope for the best.
Yeah, no, regardless of what kind of bad genetic cards we've been dealt, you can reshuffle the deck with diet.
Yeah. In some ways, that might be a great time to bring in. I mean, we probably don't have time to explore your guidance on how not to die of each of the diseases you include here, which do include heart disease, lung diseases, brain diseases, digestive cancers, diabetes, breast cancer. That's what reading the book is for, is to delve into those. But we absolutely have time and sort of must, I think, explore some of the more prominent elements of the whole foods, plant-based diet that you're not merely recommending in the book, but again, you're documenting the impact of these foods with scientific study after scientific study. So unquestionably, the star of the Dr. Greger Show is broccoli. So maybe you could describe why broccoli became number one in your book, literally and figuratively, and mention maybe at least a few of the diseases and ailments that broccoli has been proven to sort of work its magic on.
Well, greens are the healthiest foods, and the healthiest kind of greens are these cruciferous vegetables. These are your broccoli family vegetables, such as kale and collard greens, cabbage, Brussels sprouts. I encourage people to keep like a, you know, purple cabbage in their fridge at all times to slice off shreds onto basically any meal for a colorful, health-promoting garnish, basically. The reason cruciferous vegetables are so good for us, we think, is because it has a compound found basically nowhere else in the plant kingdom, nowhere else in the food supply, so we don't eat it, we don't get it. It's called sulforaphane, which has just remarkable properties. I go through and document the kind of variety of benefits to one's body, many of which derive from their induction of what are called phase 2 enzymes in the liver. These are detoxifying enzymes. So you hear people talking about they want to detox. Well, I mean, you don't need to detox. You have a whole organ for that. It's called your liver. That's what your liver does 24 hours a day. We can actually boost our ability of our liver to detoxify any substances coming into the body by eating cruciferous vegetables every day. So much so that if, like you said, that you have some broccoli, then you actually will have to drink, you know, an extra cup of coffee to get the same kind of caffeine buzz, because the broccoli so boosts your ability of your liver to clear caffeine from your system that you actually you won't get the same caffeine buzz on the same amount of coffee as you would before. It's kind of a trivial example, but it gives you a sense of the very real effect these particular types of greens have on one's body.
Yeah, well, beyond even the impact on sort of offsetting a cup of coffee, I mean, there's things that you cite about how it can affect someone's DNA, how it can affect, you know, if they do have a cancer that's metastasizing, how it can blunt that metastasizing. So it's pretty potent across the spectrum of ailments, it seems.
So both for prevention of cancer and for treatment, that's the most exciting piece, is that, you know, the most important thing, for example, someone, a man with prostate cancer, gee, are these cruciferous vegetables associated with significantly improved survival after a cancer diagnosis. Now, ideally, we want to prevent cancer in the first place, but it's nice to know that there are these, you know, kind of these powerful foods out there that can support our bodies fighting against some of these chronic diseases.
Well, that's the thing. And again, this book sort of underscores, as some other books that you've championed even yourself in the past have, that we're not just talking about making yourself healthy or preventing certain diseases or ailments or even trying to improve your condition if you do have those, but how in many instances that these kinds of diets can reverse those diseases. So that's its own sort of medical marvel, really, if people so far have not encountered that information before.
And there's only one diet that's ever been proven to reverse heart disease, number one killer of men and women in the majority of patients, and that's this plant-based diet. So if that's all a plant-based diet could do, reverse our number one killer, then shouldn't that be the default diet until proven otherwise? And the fact that it can also be effective in treating, preventing, or reversing other leading killers like high blood pressure and type 2 diabetes would seem to make the case for plant-based eating simply overwhelming. And so, I mean, that's why certainly I recommend it to all my patients, and that's the kind of centerpiece kind of diet presented in the book.
Well, even I think towards the tail end of the book, you mentioned a cardiologist who was asked, you know, why he embraces and follows a plant-based diet. He says something like, hey, I don't mind dying. I just don't want it to be my fault, which I think is pretty powerful, especially if you're a cardiologist.
Not just any cardiologist. That was Dr. Kim Williams, president of the American College of Cardiologists.
Yeah, definitely a key figure, but just, yeah, I love the idea and the response to why for him, plant-based diet. And yeah, if you don't want it to be your fault, much like this doctor, here's some significant measures you can take. So, and I guess this discussion of broccoli and some of the other parts of the diet should sort of escort us into at least a little bit of discussion about part two, and of course, within that, the Daily Dozen. For those who haven't had a chance to read the book, what is the Daily Dozen and how does it work?
Yeah, well, you know, on nutritionfacts.org, we've got more than 1,000 videos, which is great, but, you know, it's a little overwhelming. I do record kind of annual urine review videos going through the science in 12-month chunks, but I really wanted to compile all the most compelling evidence in one place, and so, that's the first half, you know, of the book, as you describe chapters on the role diamond play in preventing, arresting, and reversing each of our 15 leading causes of death. But, you know, I didn't want it to just be a reference book. You know, I wanted it to become a practical guide on translating this mountain of evidence into, you know, day-to-day decisions. So that's what became the second half of the book, where I centered my recommendations around the Daily Dozen checklist of all the things I try to fit into my daily routine.
How does it work exactly? Can you just expand on what the Daily Dozen really is and how people would follow that checklist?
Sure. So as kind of a simple tool to help, I created a free iPhone app, free Android app, so you can download Dr. Becker's Daily Dozen and just kind of follow along. Basically, these are all things, you know, as I'm going through the literature, and I'm constantly reminded about all these important things we should get into our diet. I mean, just from my own perspective, you know, I'd read some amazing study about the role of flax seeds, for example. And so, you know, I put flax seeds in my diet. But then, for whatever reason, a few weeks later, I just got out of the habit. And then all of a sudden, this new study would come out about another amazing thing about flax seeds. I'm like, oh, I forgot flax seeds. So I was like, all right, I got to make a list of like all the things I really want to get in my diet. So I started this list, and that's going to where this idea came from. And so, you know, I personally, you know, a tablespoon of ground flax seeds every day, a quarter teaspoon of turmeric, the yellow spice. You know, I talk about, you know, the healthy vegetables, the healthy fruits. I only have people eat berries every day, fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds, the best beverages, the best sweeteners, the best, you know, just all the list, how much exercise. You know, just to kind of give people a sense. And this is, these are targets. You know, this is, I mean, certainly right now I'm on the road and I'm on the road for another 20 days or so. You know, I'm not going to be able to find, you know, flax seeds in airport food court.
Yeah.
And so I'm not even reaching my own daily dose. But look, you know, I'm going to be home in a couple of weeks and I'll have better control over my diet. And then I can shoot for these goals of making sure I pack my diet with it. Many of the healthiest possible foods out there.
Well, that, you know, sort of consistent with that. I mean, the tone of the whole book, there's no vibe of the school marm. Someone doesn't hit all their marks in the daily dozen, okay. But it's clear that if someone does regularly hit those marks or comes as close as they can, they're going to feel better. They're going to enjoy better health. A serious disease they have will likely not progress. And in some instances, as we talked about, that disease may well reverse course. So, again, the fact that it's an iPhone or an Android app, it's very easy. I have one on my iPhone, and it's very easy to just tick off those things. And again, if you don't hit them all, I don't feel like, I'm going to be scolded by Dr. Greger or the spirit of Dr. Greger. But I just, on the other hand, to flip it around, it's more like, hey, look how well I did today, and hopefully tomorrow I'll do better.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You kind of alluded to this, but I'd be very curious. I was going to ask you this anyway, because, I mean, you're in the midst of a tour that looks so grueling, it might put the itinerary of a new, like, young rock band to shame. When you're on the road like this, I mean, what strategies do you employ? You already said, like, hey, I know I'm not going to hit the daily dozen. I know I'm not going to get flax seeds in the airport food court. But what strategies do you do? Just because I think a lot of people who don't travel or don't maintain that kind of tour that you are, but people travel, they're on the road. What are some strategies that you employ to continue eating at least the best way that you can relative to the daily dozen or relative to your overall recommendation in the book?
It's getting easier than ever before to eat healthier on the road. Every time I go out, I'm constantly surprised. So, you know, for example, look, there's Starbucks everywhere. All Starbucks have oatmeal. Now a lot of the Starbucks have fresh strawberries, not strawberries, blueberries, like actual real blueberries. That's just crazy to me.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I can't believe I can, you know, and there's like one on every corner. So I know I can like almost always get breakfast wherever I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a lot of these kind of fast casual restaurants like Chipotle, you know, Quiznos. I mean, these kind of things, they're offering things like brown rice. I'm constantly surprised at kind of the plant-based options in mainstream, kind of fast food chains, fast casual chains.
Yeah.
And so there's just places I know. You know, there's a lot of, I'm in the bigger cities, there's always a Whole Foods, they have a great salad bar. So you just kind of get a list of, kind of familiarize yourself with the menus of some of these places. And then it's like, look, wherever you are, you know, worst comes to worst, I'm eating my, you know, Taco Bell black bean burritos. But, you know, hopefully I can find some healthier food out there.
Sure.
But I'm surprised.
For me,
mostly it's the time. Usually I'm just running from, you know, I'm running from the airport straight to the talk or whatever, and I just, you know, can't stop anywhere. But I know that pretty much wherever I am, if I had the time, I could get some pretty healthy food.
Again, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Dr. Michael Greger, whose new book is How Not to Die. He's in the midst of a speaking tour that includes multiple Florida appearances, including February 24th at Unity of Palm Harbor. This conversation was recorded Monday. So you made a passing reference to turmeric. Maybe you could say a little bit more about that, because, I mean, relative to all the things that I think are in the book, or at least in the daily dozen, I mean, in terms of just like a little twist or sprinkle of something relative to some of these other things makes what turns out to be a huge difference.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I had never really even heard about until I started delving into the research. We now have more than 50 clinical trials that have tested turmeric against a variety of diseases, lung disease, brain disease, variety of cancers. It's been shown to make colon polyps disappear, speed recovery after surgery, effectively treat rheumatoid arthritis better than the leading drug. Also appears effective in treating osteoarthritis, other inflammatory conditions, lupus, inflammatory bowel disease. Approximately a quarter teaspoon a day.
Isn't that amazing? Something really that small can have that big of impact. And again, I mean, a lot of people, well, sounds like probably been a while that you became pretty conversant with it, but I mean, a lot of people just don't have occasion to know about turmeric. So, unless they read your book, and then they do.
That's right.
But, and again, just you made an aside to this, talking about Starbucks, but blueberries, I mean, that's really, seems like, again, one of your most sort of highly touted fruits, that just the impact of some blueberries can be really extraordinary.
Yeah, berries in general. So Harvard researchers found that women who consumed at least one serving of blueberries, two servings of strawberries each week, a slow rate of cognitive decline, you know, by as much as 2.5 years. So these results suggest that simply eating a handful of berries every day, a simple, easy, delicious dietary tweak, can slow the brain's aging by more than 2 years. The American Cancer Society studied that nearly 100,000 men and women found that those ate the most berries appeared significantly less likely to die from cardiovascular disease. Say, wait a second, tastes great and may help you live longer. That's what a plant-based diet is all about.
Yeah, and again, it's a lot of people might think, oh, plant-based diet, but it sounds like, hey, how about what's wrong with a bowl of blueberries or oatmeal with some berries on them, whatever? It's like you might be doing that anyway. So
exactly.
Yeah. So Dr. Gray, we're in our last moment or two, but you obviously find giving these lectures enormously rewarding, and you've been doing it a long time. And again, as we already addressed, like the current schedule is pretty intense, pretty hardcore. So what do you love most about it? What do you find most rewarding about giving these lectures even now, all these years later?
You know, it's really the one-on-one. You know, that's the one thing I miss. So I'm no longer doing clinical medicine. I had to give up my practice years ago, just doing writing, research, speaking, and most of which I can do, you know, from my home or from the National Library of Medicine. But, you know, it's kind of lonely work. I'm just staring at a screen all day making these videos. And, you know, so they go out in the world and I can look at the metric, you know, and see how many millions of people my work is reaching. But, and, you know, that feels great, but it's just a kind of a nebulous number. It just doesn't, you know, I don't think our brains can really see big numbers like that. And so when I go on the road, you know, people come up to me and say, oh, you know, I listened to your video and, you know, I had diabetes and I cleaned up my diet and now I no longer have diabetes and I'm playing with my grandkids again or whatever. You know, it's just these really heartwarming, you know, these stories where people revolutionize their health. And it's just that what keeps me going those late nights, you know, working on the latest video when I should really be going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really inspires me, the faces of people who come up and, you know, tell me the impact that my work has had on their lives. And that just really kind of fills me up and kind of tops me off again so I can go back home for a few more months and churn out videos. And I can remember those faces and those stories. And that it continues to inspire me to push myself even farther, to dig a little deeper, and get bigger and better videos up.
Yeah, you even cite a few different times in the new book correspondence that you've gotten in the wake of people seeing stuff, either lectures that you've given in the past or, of course, all kinds of things that's been posted on nutritionfacts.org, and how, indeed, their lives were changed. There's a number of those. So, you know, we should just mention, we talked about this in some detail the last time you were on the show, but nutritionfacts.org made, I think, kind of a passing reference to it, but every single day there's new content, videos and or studies and or other findings posted there, and it's just elephantine. I mean, the stuff you can find there, but it's all easily categorized, it's all very accessible, and so whatever people have any interest in, and of course it's free, there's no cost to go there, or there's no special, as I think you cite somewhere, no special field or membership where you have to pay extra dough or whatever. So it's a huge resource, and I think it's made a big difference to a lot of people.
Happy to help.
Yeah, that's great. Well, so Dr. Greger, so let's again tell people that the new book is How Not to Die, and, you know, catchy title. And, of course, the lettering actually is from Greens, fittingly enough, so it softens the sort of onerous impact there. And the website for Dr. Greger is Dr. Greger, it's GREGER.org or nutritionfacts.org. So, Dr. Greger, thanks again for joining us on Talking Animals, and we'll catch up with you on one of these lectures in Florida and look forward to it.
So happy to make it. Looking very much forward to coming down to Florida.
Thank you so much.
All right, our thanks to Dr. Greger. In a few moments, I'll chat briefly with Gene Alkire of Southeastern Guide Dogs about the organization's string of walkathon fundraisers starting one this Saturday in Bradenton. Want to quickly, though, thank an anonymous pledger who sent in a generous $65 donation in support of Talking Animals and WNF during the Dr. Greger interview. Then another anonymous pledger donated another $100 while the Dr. Greger interview was underway. And then just a moment ago, yet a third anonymous pledger with another $100 donation in support of Talking Animals and especially WMNF. So thank you one and all. Appreciate it. And in related news, I'll be interviewing Dr. Greger again next Wednesday show and probably the Wednesday after that with these kind of results. So anyways, right now it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner with a short piece not unrelated to our conversation with Dr. Greger. This is Aaron Foley with Vegan Cooking for One in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
To travel, I get, you know, I get caught up on my reading because I'm a huge nerd. I love the books. I love the books. I tell you, when you're in a bookstore and you start looking around, there's actually like a lot of depressing books out there, like books on wars. I know, depressing things are hilarious. Books on wars and plagues and poverty, hilarious. But then I discovered the most depressing book of all time. It's actually in the cooking section. It's called Vegan Cooking for One. That's depressing. No meat, no fish, no dairy, no friends. Screw it, throw in the towel. The back of the book, it's like, if you love Vegan Cooking for One, you'll love The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath.
That was Aaron Foley with a piece called Vegan Cooking for One, taken from her CD, Lower the Bar. Let's move now into our conversation with Jane Alkire of Southeastern Guide Dogs about their walkathon events coming up, starting with this Saturday's is the first one in Bradenton. Let's welcome Jane Alkire to Talking Animals. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. So let's briefly, we've had a number of shows about Southeastern Guide Dogs and from different angles, but let's nonetheless briefly hear about what Southeastern Guide Dogs is and what its mission is.
Sure. So Southeastern Guide Dogs is a guide dog school located in Palmetto, Florida, and we're on 33 beautiful acres, and we breed, raise, and train dogs to become eventual seeing eye dogs for the visually impaired.
One of the hallmarks of Southeastern Guide Dogs that I always like to highlight on any sort of reference to them is that the human that gets paired with the dogs that you guys have taken great pains to train, and just coincidentally, we have a guide dog in training here with its razor just at the station, just on a weird coincidence. But anyway, the point is there's a lot that goes into preparing those guide dogs and training them and the whole living with puppy razor for a year, etc. And the thing that's, I think, really striking, a lot of people might not know, is that once it's paired with that human does not pay a cent.
That's exactly right. All of our dogs are provided at zero cost to the recipient, and that's a really, really amazing thing. That's not something many other guide dog schools can say. These dogs are estimated to cost anywhere between $50,000 and $60,000 per dog, and that is free of charge to the recipient.
By which you refer, sorry to cut you off, Jane, I just meant, by which you refer to sort of everything that goes into all the training and the raising and everything that sort of goes into preparing
exactly
a dog to then
everything
be ready.
From the genetics and the reproduction to the breeding and training, there's a lot that goes into it.
And even with that, some of the things we've covered on the show over the years is that a large percentage of those dogs that have all those resources poured in them still sometimes end up washing out, at least as seeing eye dogs. They may go on to be some other kind of service dog, but it's very, very difficult to sort of make the grade. Yeah,
it is really difficult to finally make the official guide dog status.
Yeah.
We like to use the term career change.
Okay.
So if a dog doesn't quite make it through all 40 commands, which is what was required to become an eventual guide dog, we have a lot of trainers on site that determine, okay, what is this dog going to be better at doing?
Sure.
And many times they are career changed into becoming service dogs for our military veterans.
Mm-hmm.
The PTSD dogs are a very, very in need and popular service that we provide right now. So that is something that many of the dogs become eventually. Sometimes the dogs become, they might have amazing genetics and we decide they're going to become a breeder for our school. We have dogs that even work for Fish and Wildlife or are bomb sniffing dogs at airports. So we really try to find the career that matches the dogs and the dog's personality the best, even though sometimes they don't make it to guide dog status.
Right.
That's okay too.
Right. Well, that's the thing. That's what goes with the career change, which is perhaps my favorite semantic piece of news today. So anyway, let's get to then with those tremendous expenses and again, nonetheless, providing those dogs for free to someone that becomes a client and is paired with those dogs, that certainly places a greater premium on fundraising measures. So I think that sort of brings us in a way directly to Walkathon. What is Walkathon and how does it work?
Sure. So Walkathon is our biggest fundraiser of the year. And this year we have 9 of them in 9 different locations. We're really excited about that. And it's really an opportunity for anyone and everyone to get involved with our school, regardless if they are a graduate or if they are a puppy raiser or a volunteer. The Walkathon's open to everybody, to neighbors, to friends, to family, to, you know, your fellow church members. It's open to the whole gang. And
so,
Walkathon really is, it's just like it says, it's a party. It's a big walk.
And so basically, I assume that most people that do Walkathon walk with their dog of one kind or another, but I guess that's not necessarily required. If people want to just walk for the sake of helping do the event and raise the money, could they just walk sans canine?
Oh, of course. Of course. So it is dog friendly. However, we do ask the dogs are on a non-retractable leash. Those things get kind of crazy sometimes. But it is open to the whole family. And regardless if you have an animal or a dog, that's okay too. As long as you are a dog lover and want to come out and have some fun and enjoy some music and food, then the Walkathon is the place to be at. And it's free of charge. There's absolutely no charge. Fundraising, of course, is encouraged, but is not necessary.
The first one in the sequence, if I'm not mistaken, is in Bradenton this Saturday, Jane.
Yes,
so why don't you give us the details of where and when and anything else people might want to know, and then we'll get into some of the other Walkathons that follow after that one.
Sure. So Bradenton is kind of the cornerstone of our Walkathon events. It's the first one we started many years ago, and it's still standing strong, and it's this weekend, so we've been busy getting ready for that. It's this Saturday at Rossi Park, which is along the beautiful Riverwalk down in downtown Bradenton. Festivities start at 8:30, and we'll have music and entertainment, lots of food, and some wonderful musicians that are going to perform. The walk itself starts right at 10 o'clock, so we'll all go out at 10 o'clock and take a short 3K loop around Riverwalk and come back to Rossi Park to do the raffle drawing, which is a very popular part of Walkathon. We do a $1,000 raffle drawing on site right then and there for participants, so that's a very popular part of what we do.
Sure. And Jane, do the subsequent walkathons, for example, I know this, the Braden one is like you say, the cornerstone, the sort of first of many in the area, including St. Pete the mm-hmm. following Saturday, the 27th. But do they all pretty much follow the same schedule of events, or is there some vary from location to location?
Nope, great question. They have in the past, but this year we decided to stick with a very similar schedule for all 9 events. That way it's not confusing for anyone. They start at 8:30 in the morning, and festivities kind of start then and there. And at 10 o'clock, all of the walks start. And depending on how fast you walk, everyone kind of meets back up around 11, 11:30 for the raffle drawing. And that's for all 9 events.
Gotcha. Let's give, if there's a Facebook page and or a website where people could find out where there's one maybe closer to them, where they might want to head out and get involved in this cool activity.
Sure. Yeah, so we're not just here in the Manatee area. We go as far down as Fort Myers and as far north as the villages and Polk County and everywhere in between. You can go to our website, which is guidedogswalkathon.org.
Okay.
And check that out. It's pretty simple to navigate from there.
Yeah.
And, of course, Southeastern has a Facebook page as well. And if you just go onto Facebook and type in Southeastern Guide Dogs, you will find our page, and all of our walks are listed on our events listings.
Great. All right, Jane. Well, it sounds simple enough. It sounds like a lot of fun. And again, it sounds like it's significant to the budget, ongoing budget for Southeastern Guide Dogs. So,
Thank you. We couldn't do it without the volunteers and our participants. And we're so lucky to have such a strong supporting group. And I hope to meet a lot of you there this weekend.
Great. Thanks, Jane. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Good luck.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Bye bye. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour, it constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering your very own Talking Animals t-shirt. That's right, you heard me. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements. Kicking it off with news from the final moments last night at the Westminster Kennel Club, where CJ, a German short-haired pointer, was named America's top dog. It was considered apparently something of an upset. In fact, the handler of one of the other favorites, a German shepherd, stepped towards the prize silver bull upon hearing the word German. Oops, awkward. Anyways, congratulations to CJ. Florida Voices for Animals annual Have a Heart for the Animals Dinner and Silent Auction will be held Sunday, February 28th, 2:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Trang Viet Cuisine, 1524 Fowler Avenue. Victoria Moran, the best-selling author of 12 books, including The Love Power Diet on Plant-Based Weight Loss, will be the featured speaker. You can contact floridavoicesforanimal.org for more information, and they do ask that you RSVP before February 27th. Looking ahead a little bit, the Humane Society of Pinellas and St. Pete MRI, in an unlikely teaming perhaps, are excited to announce the 2016 Fur Affair on Wednesday, March 16th, 2016, at Earthscape's Garden Room in Palm Harbor from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Guests will enjoy assorted signature dishes and tapas-sized portions brought of a variety of local restaurants, local craft beers, wines, sweet treats, live entertainment, and more. So to find out more about that, go to humanepinellas.org. And something we mentioned a while back, but I believe it's still underway and pretty significant. That's the Humane Society of Tampa Bay has this Game of Homes cat adoption initiative. So they started off the year with this sort of great money that was awarded to them by Best Friends Animal Society to support cat adoptions. So they have greatly discounted cat adoptions. And you can find out more by going to humanesocietytampa.org. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. And there'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. One hint, it's by a veteran whose new album, harks back to the rocking heyday. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Why is it never light on my lawn? Why did it rain and never say goodbye to the newborn? On the big screen they showed us the sun, but not as bright in life as the real one. It's never quite the same as the real one. And tell me, Gray Seal, how does it feel to be so wild?
We seem to have another people who think they know. Let's take them and put them on there. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're on the air live. Can you name that animal tune?
Gray Seal by Elton John.
You are correct, sir. Fantastic. What is your name?
Don Barlow.
John?
Don with a D.
Okay, Don Barlow. Cool. I'm going to come back and get your information. You are our winner for today, and we'll get you off a Talking Animals t-shirt. Thanks for listening. Congratulations.
All right.
So we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Laurie is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, February 24th, when my guest will be Anita Kreintz, the Toronto animal rights activist who was arrested after giving water to a truckload of pigs on a sweltering summer day last June as they were about to enter a slaughterhouse. He's charged with criminal mischief, facing a potential jail sentence of 6 months or a $5,000 fine, or both, again, for giving water to overheated pigs en route to a slaughterhouse. This case has drawn international attention, and I discuss it in detail with Kreintz on next week's Talking Animals. I hope you'll join me for that. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, which features all sorts of information as well as archives and past podcasts of every past Talking Animals program from the crazy show's inception. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show. Sure, Talking Animals radio show, but also me personally would be good too, because we put a lot of stuff in both places. Some are more easily accessible. And please follow us on Twitter as well while you're at it. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show with an animal song, sort of. It's an instrumental. The A La La's with No Werewolf. On WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond, Community Conscious Radio. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals.